Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
if I had $1 million.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, on the board. A little late, a little bit of a surprise snowfall here in Chicago. Not so much they called for it a little bit, but it's sticking and causing things to be slippery. So everybody doing something this morning, I think it's a little bit late. Kevin, how are you, bud?
I'm doing okay.
Did you guys get any snow over there?
Yeah, we got some snow.
Just enough to be aggravating here, like an inch everywhere.
Yeah, it's pretty damn rude at this time of year.
Yeah, well, but the opening day is like, what, 10 days away or something? Like next Friday or something?
Opening day in the snow.
Yeah, well, we've done that, yeah. I actually went to a Cub opening day where they, Dallas Green was the general manager, and he did manage to shovel the outfield, but he didn't shovel the stands. Pretty good thing you had to have shoes that, because you were in slush the whole game. But outfield was, you know.
I won't go to games in April outdoors.
Yeah, it's a little rough. You know, we did that when we were young.
Yeah, you could get a beautiful day, but you could just as well get a really, really cold day. And, baseball played in the cold just isn't fun, let alone watched.
Well, that's the truth. My seats, when I had my regular seats, I absolutely loved them. They were first or upper deck, looking right down the third baseline. And the upper deck at Wrigley, for those who haven't been there, is suspended over the lower seats, so you're pretty close. It's not like new stadiums where the upper deck starts where the lower deck ends, which is, I don't get the connection with there, but that's the way new ones are.
That's why they don't have to put up posts, obstructions.
Well, if you do it right, you don't have to put up posts, but you could do it without. You could, but anyway, the beautiful thing was it was in the shade, so it was really warm. You got a little bit of a breeze up there, and you got the shade, and it was beautiful to watch a game. Bad news is if it was cold, the wind came right off the lake, and the first thing it hit was your snoot. There was like no buildings in the way, nothing, just whack right in the face. And so you could get a couple of nights where if it was windy coming off the lake, it was pretty breezy. But that's why they have bars, Kevin. Did you enjoy your St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Taught a class until 9 o'clock.
Well, there you go. Well, there's bars open until 10 and 11, you know. Went to the Tripoli, had a very nice corned beef sandwich, which I do every year, and I was happy, you know, because I kind of dodge the stuff on Saturday and Sunday. I'm more of a traditionalist. One day, I actually wouldn't mind going to a parade that's actually on the day like we used to have here. A lot of things we used to do, Kevin, were kind of a lot of fun that we don't do anymore. And I like the parades down LaSalle Street on the regular day, not in the park on a Saturday. Who the hell wants to be in the park on a Saturday? A ways away from anything. I mean, what's the point? And people would be on the Board of Trade, we'd walk in the parade and go right. You know, it was a real, really nice time. And if anything's a nice time, you gotta ruin it. Right? Isn't that what we do now? Seems. Just saying.
Yeah, we pretty much like to ruin things in general. Yeah.
My uncle, who's been dead a long time, said, the way we're going, we're going to screw up sex. That was before HIV. So he was somewhat, I think he was pretty clairvoyant on that, wouldn't you say? We have the weather going on here. We had the election yesterday.
Hey, we screwed up sex.
Well, we made it more dangerous. Kind of thing. But anyway, the election was here yesterday, and I'm a little bit disgusted on that, but I don't know what you can do about it. The the amount of individual big money coming in the last week and giving everybody these massive amounts of negative ads that nobody could possibly check up on if they were true or not. I find it really disgusting, Kevin. The first couple of months of the thing was all, seemed to me, everybody going to their focus group, finding out what people wanted to hear, and doing that, which I didn't really like all that much. But then all of a sudden, the last week, it absolutely changed. And whoever these guys were getting, guys and ladies were getting their money from, I kind of suspect where they are, is massive negative crap on the other person. Totally unable to be checked by anybody. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, rich donors, well, of course they're rich donors. Who the hell, you and I aren't giving them $1 million. Of course they're rich donors, for God's sake. And, you know, it just was a massive onslaught. I think a lot of it was led by Pritzker, you know, which is one of the reasons I'm not a huge Pritzker fan. But they absolutely buried this guy, Raja, you know, with getting money from the same people that, you know, built a detention facility. I mean, how do you check and see if that's true? I mean, I don't know if any of these guys turn money away from anybody, really. Jesse Jackson's kid lost, which I was kind of surprised, even though he should have lost since he went to jail last time he was there. But some stuff is weird. But I really don't like the negativity just piled on people because it's all you remember. I mean, I don't know. I just, bad taste in my mouth about it. I don't know what I can do about it either. So,
how did Stratton do? I think she was running
in the
Senate.
Yeah, she won.
So, that's speaking of negativity. She ran an ad last month that was just a collection of people just repeating F Trump, but they were actually saying the word.
Yeah.
So that was clever. You know, that was a deep thought about just one person after the next going bleep Trump.
Yeah.
Bleep. Good job.
Well, I mean, I'm getting increasingly horrible concerns about what's going on in Washington, but that's another story. But yeah, everybody, one lady, on the Republican side, a lady who said that she fought against China. That was her thing.
Yeah, and which war?
No, I think she must have had an argument over the bill at the Chinese restaurant or something. I don't know what the hell she's talking about. I mean, and the Democrats, you know, they fought against this. They fought against. What do you mean you fought against? You were the controller, for God's sake. How did you fight against this or that or the other thing? I mean, but you just say what people want to hear, and you know, decide whether they want to listen. I was kind of disappointed in this guy. The older I seem to be getting here, Kevin, and as much as we have a administration that kind of hates anybody here who's not whatever. The second generation of some of these immigrant families, the more I get to know some of them, and I'm not all or anything like that, it's not that there's bad people everywhere, but it seems like they have some of them have a much better view of what America is all about than some of the people that are here. They seem to love the place more. So I don't mind a couple of second generation minorities getting in these offices. I mean, I honestly believe that some of them think are happier to be here than the people who were born here. I mean, well, these people are all born here, they're second generation, but I mean, I really do think that a lot of people that are here seem to have forgotten why we're here. And you know, when it comes to crime and punishment, when it comes to the process, when it comes to, you know, why people are innocent to proven guilty, I think a lot of people, why there's a stop sign there, because, you know, you can't just run through it. I mean, I don't know what's going on, but I think some of these, the people who are second generation here appreciate it more than some of the people that are here. You know, it's a gross generalization, but I mean, it's observable to me. And then, you know, anyway, you wonder where we're all headed. I see a lot of these people not all that qualified. I don't know where did Stratton come from other than being lieutenant governor? I mean, is that the only political job where you have nothing to do? You're not the president of the Senate, like the vice president's supposed to be in Washington. What do? You wait around for the governor to croak? There's nothing to that. I don't think there's any responsibility with the job at all. Which,
great job. Yeah, great job.
And what do you do on? I suppose if you were somebody that the governor, you know, had some, you know, had confidence in, and you can make good out of any job. I mean, you know that. You know, whatever it is, you can find something that there's a hole in the system, and you could work to fill it. You could spend a huge day as a lieutenant governor if you wanted to, or you could do nothing. But how do you have any idea what these people? You know, and I've said this before. I mean, my stepfather was in the nursing home in Manteno, and which is a veterans home, and so took him. My brother, smart enough to say, "Hey, let's get him in there because the places that were here really sucked." And obviously, it's a lot cheaper, but it was also a lot nicer. But, you know, it's south of Chicago, so Dan would go down there two nights a week, and I'd go every Saturday. Most people never had a visitor. Anyway, so it took 5-6 months to get in there. That's the waiting list. So my first day down there, I'm going, what's going on? The place is half full. Why is there such a waiting list when it's half full? So I say to the guy, you know, we since we were there all the time, we actually became friends with people who ran it. I said, well, why are all these rooms empty? Well, we don't have enough budget. And I'm going, well, why is there such a waiting list? Well, because we have to have a certain amount of people at work here for every person who's in here. And, you know, you can't all of a sudden double the amount of people and not have any more staff, or else, you know, your care is horrible. And I said, well, I get that. And Tammy Duckworth, the job before she was a senator, she became head of the veterans stuff here in Illinois. And you can certainly understand that. The lady lost both legs in Afghanistan. Seemed to me to be pretty bright. I mean, I still think she's pretty bright. I don't know. I haven't followed her all that much. But, Kevin, I have no idea. She probably had that job, I don't know, 3-4 years maybe. You couldn't ask me, or I don't know how you could find out, if at the end of her tenure there was enough budget for the places to be three-quarters full, whether it was worse, better. Did the budget, I'm not saying that she did she find money, but, well, yeah, I guess. I mean, did she find a way to make them better and more people, and did she cut that waiting list down from 6 months to four? Or did it go from 6 to 8? I have no idea. How do you have any idea if these people ever do a good job or not?
No, VA actually publishes statistics.
Well, this is state VA. This isn't federal. These were state homes. That's why she was ahead of it. These your veterans' homes in the states are run by the state, not by the VA. Yeah. So, how do you know? How do you have any idea whether, you know? I mean, I talked to a lady in Indiana one night. Of course, you go to this thing, and she just retired. She was a state senator. Nice lady. I'd known her before just to say hello, but never really had a long conversation with her. And she always had the reputation of somebody who worked pretty hard, you know, from other people. But, you know, you don't. But all I know is whenever there was a cookout, she lived in the area, she'd show up. There was no bodyguards, nothing like that. She'd show up. Everybody knew her, sit there, have a couple of beers, have a burger. And where we were, the music was so freaking loud. I walk outside, and who's there but her? And she goes, hey, sit down over here. Okay. I sit down. Of course, I'm 6'2". She's, you know, 4'11 on a good day. So it was interesting. Good thing we sat down. And I said, well, what's it been like down? I had a chance to talk to her for like an hour. And she says, you know, it was the most amazing thing I ever did. She goes, you learn so much. She goes, my first committee they put me on was highways or something. She goes, I don't know anything about highways. But I worked real hard. I went through every single contract. Realized the good ones and the bad ones and what needed to be in the contract. Talked to a bunch of lawyers and so forth and engineers. I learned more than I ever have since college. And she said, I needed to do that to do a good job on that committee. Then she said, they go, okay, well, you did such a good job there. We want to move you to the, you know, medical, whatever it is, the Medicaid and the Medicare and all that stuff and that committee. And she goes, that was another 6 months of constant study to know who gets paid what, where the money comes. She goes, if you do your job right, it's a really, you spend a lot of time, a lot of reading, you talk to a lot of people trying to find out, you talk to doctors, you talk to what's wrong with the system, what is wrong with the system. How do you have any idea if somebody's doing that or not, Kevin? I mean, you get rumors. If you talk to them, they may say something. How do you have any idea if they're doing that or they don't do crap? if they're adding to the system or don't.
If they publish their data and all that kind of stuff that is involved in what their job is, then you know. But otherwise, you don't, because you can't.
Yeah, I mean, how do you know if the person in there is just planning their next election or they're actually doing something? And some of these jobs are basically to plan your next election, like the
water, or something like the state. They do have a pretty regular, at least around here, they have a pretty regular set through, generally through the Chamber of Commerce, and they will, they'll spend some time going through everything that they're up to downstate and what the issues are and so on. So, if you feel like going out usually on a Saturday morning or an evening during the week, and if you feel like going out there, you can talk to them and you can find out what's been going on.
Well, I'm just saying, and at the end of the day, I think 20% of the people voted. So you're back to that. How does anybody, a lot of this stuff was, I spent an hour going through, my brother signed me onto this, the WDTW, Channel 11, without giving any recommendation on judges, they just have a list of everybody with all the people that recommend qualified or not qualified, all the different bar associations and everything. They just have all those seven or eight places, and for every judge, they give you what they say. So there's no editorial piece or anything like that. I guess there's like seven, well, there are, it was seven, I can't name it what they were, they're all just a jumble of letters. The ABA was on there and, a few others, more than a few others. So I went through this whole mess, and I've got like a list of maybe 20 people that are going for this guy's vacancy, that guy's vacancy. I get to my place, we must be in a small sub-circuit. There's like four guys on there. and none of the people were the people that I even looked at. So I'm right back where I started from on the judges. But then again, a lot of them were unopposed, so I guess I didn't have to worry about anything there. But, most of the people are unopposed. Alexi Genulis is unopposed. Maria Pappas, the treasurer, was unopposed. Alexi's going to have that job forever, but I actually think he's doing a pretty good job. Since he's been as Secretary of State, it's much more automated. I mean, you go online and get your thing, and it comes in 2 days. I mean, I don't know if that was all ongoing when he got there or whatever, but you can see improvements. I mean, how do you ever know if they're really busting their ass or not? But looks like he's got a job for life if he wants it. I mean, crazy stuff. Is Michigan like that? Indiana's sort of like that. What's Michigan like? I have no idea. I've never talked to anybody in politics in Michigan.
No, I don't spend a lot of time on Michigan politics other than very local.
You're more of an Indiana guy even though you actually live in Michigan.
Yeah, I have more interest, more working and educational interest and things like that in Indiana. So that's why I pay more attention to Indiana.
Well, what do you make of the last couple of days? And today, S&P futures up 21, NASDAQ up 109. Market seems to be turning north here. Is it all because the world has figured out that because of the actions of the administration that there'll be way more money coming into the system, or we're just going to pump these assets up even more? It's got to be the only conclusion here, because I don't see any tax bill coming through. I'm not recommending it. I'm just saying. And the last auction was pretty crummy, so I don't think they can just go out and borrow more money from people. It looks to me like they're going to print it, which means inflation, which means asset prices going up, unless somewhere along the line you get a 10-year, 30-year rate of 9-10%, which I think they're toying with. And I don't know, they think a better Fed chairman's going to lower rates. I don't think it makes any difference if all of a sudden you get this inflation pop. But I mean, wouldn't surprise me if the market kept going up from here, even though you would think that maybe it shouldn't, but I think it might. So what is your view of that? I mean, do you think, where are they going to get this money?
I have no idea.
Well, the only...
If I told you about, all of the war stuff, this is just, it's happening, so sit, make your popcorn, sit back and watch the show.
I don't have any
other opinions on it than that, because I don't know that once it's underway, it's happening. It's going to continue to happen to some kind of conclusion, and then we'll see.
Well, the idea that you don't like somebody, therefore you get to kill them, I think is a little out of control here, but that's just me. I don't know what the where that leads the world to, a total might makes right sort of thing. Whatever. But, I mean, the money part's not going away, whether or not you think things are going right or not. You're talking about $1 trillion every 100 days. And I don't know why I got myself so tied up in this. Minesweepers, I can't believe we went and asked Britain for minesweepers when we had four there that we decommissioned like a month ago. I mean, there's somehow, maybe this all happened so fast where people couldn't get their ducks in a row or whatever. Or, I mean, maybe the people who were decommissioning minesweepers weren't told there's going to be a war in a month. I'm assuming that's what happened. But it seems a little crazy. I don't know if you were listening to yesterday about the new ship that's out there now with 200 and some days on its first tour. God, Kevin, how would you like to be one of those guys? I don't think they've even been to port. We're stretching those guys a little bit, don't you think?
The one saving grace is that they have so much access to communications that, you know, people, it isn't like the old days when you were just isolated. It's not nearly as isolated anymore. And I know that from I used to have chats with a friend who had been deployed, and you know we were able to visit. Everything of course is monitored and so on, but I do think that is one thing that we have nowadays that, you know, whereas there was a time when you went out the port, that means you were pretty much out of touch with everybody in your family and your friends, your circle of friends and all that kind of stuff. And that's just not the case anymore.
Well, there was of course, if you go through YouTube long enough, you'll find somebody will tell you that getting hit in the head with a rock's a good thing. But they had the psychology guy on there talking about that very, he said, I'm not so sure that being able to see and talk to your family every day when you're halfway around the world is better or worse after a while. Because in some cases, it's worse. I suppose I'd like to be able to talk to people rather than not. In the old days, kid went off to war, either the kid showed up one day or the chaplain did, right? That was the next you heard, right? Either he wasn't coming back or he did.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of with you on this one, but the guy had an interesting point. He goes, you know, just being able to see the places that you can't be in, it's almost like, you know, if you're in Alcatraz, you look right across the thing and you see everybody having fun in San Francisco, it made it worse. Or maybe did. I mean, I suppose that's all individual, but, you know, I just wonder if anybody's coordinating all this stuff. You know, and I was talking a long time ago that when you go from 16 carriers to 12 to 10, what it does to your scheduling and the people and those kinds of things, and you just can't have somebody out there. You know, if the elevator can go up and down 2,000 times, you can't just say, make it 3,000. You know, you just, without any kind of maintenance. Now, all these guys are capable of doing a lot of stuff at sea, but my understanding is those ships come in, they're pretty ragged. It's almost like a total rebuild to get them to go out again. So I don't know, and I don't know what the, you know, how much we're stretching people or not. I mean, I guess in World War II you stayed out there forever, didn't you, or whatever it seemed like, but imagine being on a submarine, being out for like 4 months on a submarine. Ugh. But we're asking people to do a lot of stuff. I don't know what the prices of oil, I'm kind of surprised how much diesel's run up. There's diesel $6 in some places, supposedly, right? I haven't seen it here like that. Here we're, in Chicago is bad, somehow, Kevin, we're still $3.50 on the gas, which I'm kind of surprised because RBOB is $3.16, up another 4 cents today. And RBOB is the price of wholesale gas in New York Harbor. So it's the delivery point if you want to trade unleaded gas. Well, $3.17 plus 90 some cents in tax puts you over $4. Not to mention you got to get it where you got to transport it. And yet, here it's still $3.46. They must be working off old inventory or something, but it's going to be over $4 pretty quick, don't you think? It has to be. Maybe.
Well, Yeah, I suppose so. You know, we have plenty of domestic production, and there's a lot of inventory in the system. So, you know, some of it is reacting to what is believed to be the future, because there really isn't a lot of there wasn't a lot of short term basis for the quick run up.
Well, I mean, you're really hard pressed to sell somebody gas at $3.50 if you know the next tank you're buying is $4.50. I mean, I guess you can do it, but
it's because they're not doing. You know, I keep saying they don't. You know, nobody does cost plus, so that's not what we're seeing. But you know, if you were looking at it strictly from the cost standpoint, there would be no basis for the price increase. Still, the higher cost got there.
Yeah, except as Milton Friedman once said,
but that's not how it's done.
No, it's not how it works. No, you're 3.46 because the guy on the block is 3.46. Basically, right? And you hope you don't hope
yeah, you have to compete, and you have to do what, you know, you have to price it according to what people are willing to pay for it.
Well, you could just put it up at $5 and just wait. You know, you figure it might get there. Down in the city, it's $5.
You could do that, and you might or might not get away with it.
It seems like it hits the commercial guys a lot quicker because, Carl was talking about, the diesel is what's really up. Like, I mean, when did that flip, Kevin? I mean, most of our lifetime, diesel was always cheaper than gas. And was it 5 years ago when diesel went above it, and just, or was it 10 years ago and just kind of stayed there? Totally negates the idea of having a diesel car, pretty much, right?
Yeah, and I can't remember the last time I saw a diesel car.
No, I mean, whatever happened to all those Volkswagens that came over here that they couldn't sell? Did they send them all back or what? There was never any discount price on them that I recall. One of my guy I knew from the trading floor had a Volkswagen Rabbit diesel. This had to be 1982, 3, or 4, somewhere in there. The thing got 50 miles at a gallon. And but now I read later somebody was talking about when we were trying to get better gas mileage. Somebody, hey, what's the story with these Volkswagen Rabbit diesels? Why don't we just make those? I think to get the current safety stuff on them, like airbags and the collapsible front, where, you know, cars are a lot safer. Of course, people go faster and faster to make them not safe again. But the guy said you would have to add 1,500 pounds to the car to make the thing. It seems like a lot, or maybe it was 1,200 pounds just in other equipment to make it safe for today's regulations and stuff. Seems like a lot, but because there's a lot of small cars running around. But anyway, so what do you make of we want to talk? I got a question for you here. I'll dig it up. What do you think of the NCAA stuff? And what's your feeling? Joel was talking yesterday about these tournaments. I mean, other than a few extra bucks, how crazy is it to play three really tough games in a row the week before you got to play in a tournament?
No, there's other teams playing four in a row.
Well, so, I mean, it's,
if you don't get the way the conferences are set up now, if you don't get enough buys, you're going to play four in a row. If you're going to advance, like I pretty probably played four in a row.
How did Duke get a number one seed with those two guys hurt?
I don't know. Thought that was a little weird. I'm picking Arizona to win it all.
You know, I've not watched them play. Are they that good? What, do they have one or two guys, or they got a deep team?
What they're really good at is playing different styles of basketball, which you need to be able to do in the tournament. You have to be able to win a high scoring, free flowing game, and you have to be able to win a rock fight.
What is a stupid question? What conference might they be in these days?
Arizona.
Yeah,
they're in the Big 12.
Okay,
and that this year has been the best basketball conference.
Why is that? I mean, do you think they're better than like St. John's and Duke and those guys?
Oh yeah. They go deep. You know, in the conference, they have a lot of really good teams. You got Kansas, of course, who's always pretty good. And then you have Iowa State's good. let's see here. Let me pull them up. We sort of go down their standings.
What anyway, just I caught this one caught my eye about Hall of Fame people, but how many more were there? Any obvious teams that got left on, you know, off? Indiana, was Indiana one of them?
Yeah, Indiana was out, weren't they? Yeah, I think they're out.
But I mean, if seems to me that if you had like two or three more play-in games, that you could sort of get rid of the seven or eight teams that always were on the outside looking in. Because I always think it's a little unfair when you have it's up to, 68-team tournament? If you have a 68-team tournament, it should embody the top 68 teams, and it never does.
Well, it can't.
Well, I know.
It can't, because you have all these small conferences that get an automatic bid. So you really look at, you know, they're not going to be in the top 68 teams, but they're getting in because they won their conference, and that's the structure of the tournament. So you're really looking at, you know, your top 40 to maybe 42, 43, something like that.
Well, that's my point. So, you know, if your intention was, let's say, at least to get the top 50 teams in there, how many more play-in games would you need? Four or five? It couldn't be that many.
Yeah, but it's fine the way it is. We don't need extra rounds.
Well, they do have extra rounds. I'm just saying there's always a couple of teams that you wonder why they're not there. But Notre Dame wasn't one of them, however.
It wasn't, but if you look at the Big 12, you're just ticking down the standings. Arizona, Houston, Kansas, Iowa State, Texas Tech, TCU, then you get the first team that didn't win 20 games. That's West Virginia. They were 18-14. Then you get Central Florida, who won 21. Cincinnati, 18-15 overall. BYU, 23-11 overall. I mean, you're getting down the standings. They only had two teams. You get all the way to the bottom of the conference. They only had two teams with overall losing records. Their records out of conference are really good. As you go through the standings, you also get down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. The 10th place team was Brigham Young, who was 9-9 in the conference. So, you know, that's pretty competitive inside the conference as well as outside the conference.
All those black guys at Brigham Young, are they all Church of Latter-day Saints? I'm thinking not. Maybe they are.
Not all, but not all. Not everybody who's, especially among athletes, not everybody who goes to Brigham Young is LDS.
Yeah. What the? I'm sure it's going on, but because of the headlines grabbing of football and the NIL stuff, how crazy is it in basketball? The portals and bidding for people and all that stuff. I mean, basketball, do you think a lot of these teams actually make money on it or not? It's not football kind of money, but it's got to be something.
Yeah, there's a lot of television money tied up in basketball. The conferences, it's not close to football. Football drives the bus, but it's not close for basketball, but they do generally make money on basketball. At least the major conference teams do.
I got a quick question here. We're not going to solve it, but I got this thing on Quora. And, hey, I got a question for you guys. Now, whenever you kick up Quora now, you've got to check the box that you're not a robot. Is that to stop AI from just running through there and grabbing answers?
Well, we've had that before AI was doing this stuff.
This just started here a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago.
Well, but bots go back a long way. And what, when you say I'm not a robot, what that means is your computers get compromised, and one of the ways they get compromised is that you have people who will just build up a whole army of compromised computers, and they're running their software that they planted on your computer in the background. And they can make your computer do things. So, for instance, if you wanted to launch a denial of service attack at Stocks and Jocks, you could tell, if you have 10,000 compromised computers that you and at your central command and control, you can tell them all to start firing out www.stocksandjocks.net over and over and over again, and nobody will be able to get to your website because they're just putting more traffic at it than you can handle. So, you know, that bots do those kinds of things. But bots have been around forever, and they've been used on social media forever to influence, for instance, as election influence, that, you know, a candidate will... They'll just have a bunch of computers, not necessarily that they've compromised illegally, but that they, you know, they will fire up hundreds of computers and have them all start giving likes to a candidate or giving likes to something a candidate said to make, and, you know, so they'll all open different accounts on the social media, and then the bots will just start saying, oh, I like that, and make it look like something is popular when it isn't. That's been happening for 20 years now.
So what is me checking the I'm not a robot box? Well, how does that help them?
It means you're actually finding the box and responding to it, as opposed to just going, you know, where the bots, you know, generally don't have that kind of intelligence to be able to respond to that. They just get stuck on that question.
Okay, well, there was one, I get inundated by this, but I of course, got to read the baseball ones. It says, why isn't Dale Murphy in the Hall of Fame? And I always thought he was a spectacular player, and it turns out and this is what I wonder who the god was that decided this. This is Murphy's career taken as a whole just isn't quite good enough for the Hall of Fame. He was the best player in baseball, or very close to that, between 1980 and 1987, where he accumulated 42.2 D-WAR. This WAR thing is, since every time I read the formula, I can't understand it. It's quoted so much by people who don't know what the hell they're talking about. It's like anything else, I suppose. That's more than five a year. It includes his mediocre 1981 strike season, blah, blah, blah. Toss it out, and it's 40.5 WAR for seven seasons. He goes, most people ring up numbers like that and are only age 31 when the run ends, wind up in Cooperstown. But then he runs through a list of people that because of injury or eye problems like Kirby Puckett or stuff, only make it to like 34. Dan Mattingly's another one. Where is it written that a 7 or 10 or 12-year spectacular career isn't good enough, that somehow you have to have a body where you can play till you're 40 to be in the Hall of Fame? I don't get that at all, do you? I mean, I would never design. I mean, how do you get to be the best player in baseball for 7 years and not be good enough? I mean, because you got hurt the next year, right? Who makes that decision?
Yeah, so in Dale Murphy's case, I wouldn't be offended by him being in the Hall of Fame at all. I'm looking at some of his numbers. 18 years, you know, probably the biggest thing that comes into play here is that he had 2,111 hits over 18 years, and so, if you look at it that way, there's 2,000 hits is a good milestone, but for an 18-year player, it's not a spectacular milestone.
Well, it basically says if you're gonna have physical problems at 35, you better quit, because if you don't hang on, then it really works against you. That's what happened to all three of these people, Mattingly and guys like that. You know, that they all of a sudden had back problems, and then you could have made that case for Yaz. Even though he did make it to the Hall of Fame, his last few years he wasn't very good.
Yeah, you could, and if you look at Murphy's, if you just go from 1990 on, he played 154 games at 90, then he played 97, 57, 153, so one more full season. And in that season, he was good, he was okay, and then 18 and 26. So, yeah, he tailed off. If he would have said, after the season when he played 57 games, if he would have said, that's it, I'm just not healthy, then he probably would be looked at differently than he would than over the last, than by extending it four more years.
I just get the, I always get the feeling when people make dramatic investment decisions or judge people that are like traders and are actually on the floor making markets when you never did it. I mean, for a newspaper guy, to say, hey, what's the problem with a bad back at age 35 that has never competed anywhere near that level? And the idea of having a bad back, I mean, you watch golf last week, how spectacular these guys are. If somebody had any kind of a hitch in his back, how do you even get on the same course as these people? You know how hard it is to do what these guys do and to be mediocre with some kind of injury. To you and me who played a lot of ball, that to be able to do that, imagine you and me, like Mickey Mantle with a bum knee, being able to play center field in Major League Baseball. I mean, how many people have we ever met that could do it 100%? Right?
I agree with you. You know, that part of what makes so many of these players great is their competitiveness and their ability to compete no matter what. And, you know, I think that's something that I really respect about ball players.
Well, I mean, I remember when Ryan Stamberger was playing, I was doing, as a guest on a couple of shows, and they asked me about Ryan Stamberger. I go, you know how hard it is to be, for 162 games, there's days you don't feel so hot, you maybe hit with a pitch the day before, you might even be a tad hungover or have a cold, and still you're better than the guy who's on the team that is 100%. The reservoir that you have to have to be that person is scary. Look at Babe Ruth. For God's sake, he showed up half the time, he didn't even sleep. He was still better than anybody else. I mean, can you imagine if the guy actually was on the straight and narrow, how good he could have been? Maybe he wouldn't have been that much better. I don't know. But I would like to see a few of these guys that are, they call them borderline. I mean, Roger Maris isn't in the Hall of Fame, I don't think, is he? He's a two-time MVP right in a row. I mean, there's only been like 10 guys like that in all baseball, isn't there? Murphy was. You know, it's almost like every position has a guy who won two MVPs in a row. I used to be able to name him, Kevin. Well, center field was Murphy. Right field was Maris. Was the third base, was it Schmidt? Shortstop was Ernie Banks. Second base was it Morgan? I mean, there weren't very many. First base, I think, was Jimmy Fox. And catcher was it Yogi Berra or Johnny Bench? One of the two of them. I mean, to be the best player in baseball 2 years in a row, it's pretty interesting, isn't it?
It's damn hard to do, and so yeah, for the most part, I think, you know, Hall of Fame stuff is stupid because I don't understand the criteria for a lot of people, and it seems to be unevenly applied. So I don't get too worked up about it one way or the other, but you make a good point. I think you can make a strong case for Dale Murphy being in. How long did they go, should Ron Santo be in or not? And, you know, I always thought of Santo as a really good player, but not necessarily, I didn't see him as a Hall of Fame player. He was kind of that borderline type of guy. And so, you know, what are you really looking at with Dale Murphy? Is he a borderline or is he a surefire in? Yeah, who was it? Is Don Sutton's in, isn't he?
I think so, but I always thought Santo belonged in there because
Don Sutton. I don't really consider a Hall of Famer. I think he won 300 games though, but he had the luxury of pitching for some really good teams and pitching for a really long time. Because I also don't think I can pull him up here on Baseball Reference, but I don't think he ever won a Cy Young.
Well, he was. You could be a pitcher in those eras and be awful good and not win a Cy Young when you get Koufax and all those other guys pitching as well. I mean,
This is in the 70s. What he did, though, is he pitched for 23 years, won 20 games or more once, at a time when the number of wins really mattered.
Well, you used to get 40 starts, now you get 30.
Yeah.
Well, there's some positions. The thing about Santo, and there's a second baseman. Is it Whitaker? There's a couple of guys at second base. There's like very few second basemen are in there. It's like,
yeah, Whitaker's not. I think he's a terrific player.
Who's the other guy? There's another second baseman at Bobby. Somebody. Somebody. A name you would know. Who's the guy? the guy was a second baseman for the Orioles, I think. Anyway, but Sano, out of all the third basemen that have ever played, average home runs and defense, he's right up there. But there can't be third base and second base are the two bastard positions. There's like nobody in there. And you wonder, and then everybody has like a guy like Mark Grace. He had the most hits of anybody in the decade or something. And yeah, he had seven gold gloves. And
player, I don't think of him as a Hall of Famer, though. I think of him as just a really good player.
Well, I guess how many? I guess what I'm saying is
it's strictly opinion. I'm not basing it on any stats or anything else. It's just of the people I watched. When I think Hall of Famers, I'm thinking of Aaron Judge or somebody like that. Who's if he keeps it up, he'll be a Hall of Famer. I think of Ichiro as a Hall of Famer. Guys who, that pop into my head of the last 10, 15 years that have played, that, those are the kinds of guys I think of because they're so spectacular. And, I don't think we have to put people in the Hall of Fame. I don't even feel like compelled that we, except that they have a ceremony, so they got to do something. They shouldn't necessarily have to put somebody in the Hall of Fame every year.
Well, they don't. Football does. Football, you're required to. Baseball, you're not. They have years and there's nobody in there. Well, there probably isn't because of the Veterans Committee, but there's people that aren't voted in every year.
I can't recall the last time that happened, but I'm not saying you're wrong.
It has happened, but there's usually a couple of guys from the Veterans Committee. There's a couple of Veterans Committees. There's the old-time guys and there's the recent guys, right? Veterans?
Yeah.
But, the question is, somebody who plays 15, 18 years at a high level, to me, what's the Hall of Fame? Should there be two levels? The Babe Ruth level and then somebody else's level? Was that Joe Morgan's shot against Ryan Sandberg, who he never liked, said he really should have been a third baseman, and if he was a third baseman, his power numbers wouldn't be Hall of Fame power numbers. And I'm thinking, that's about as ignorant as a comment I've ever heard.
So that's just weird.
Yeah. So, everybody's got, their opinion on this stuff. A first baseman, you could be a first baseman like, I don't think, who's the guy in the Cardinals? He's not in the Hall of Fame, Hernandez. Tell me the guy wasn't the best player for his whole era, or one of the best players.
Keith Hernandez played for the Mets, too.
Yeah. He didn't hit enough home runs. Okay. He did everything else. A 299 lifetime batting average and like 10 gold gloves? For God's sake, what more do you want from somebody for all those years? First baseman's got to hit home runs. All right. What if he strikes out 50 times? One of the interesting interviews, we got to get to our guys, but one of our interesting interviews was, who's the guy that played left field for the Sox? The baby bull. Came from the Phillies. Greg Luzinski. He's a hell of a ball player. And he said he was, he hit, one year he hit 30 home runs from the Phillies, and the next year he hit 35. And he's, pretty proud of himself. And the guy goes, "You've struck out 100 times, that ain't worth 35 home runs." Now, today, if you hit 35 home runs, you can strike out every other time you're up, and they don't care, right? Pretty much. In those days, I don't want to watch you striking out all the time for 35 home runs. That's what? It's one every 4 days. It's not helping us out that much. The strikeouts are hurting us every day. I'd rather see a guy put the ball in play a little bit more, but that would just be me. Boy, the adage, pitchers ahead of the hitters this time of the year, God, was that for sure show in this baseball thing, like last night and the last few nights, the U.S. against Venezuela? The pitchers on all these teams just were mowing people down, weren't they?
Yeah, it was good baseball. It was really good baseball.
I didn't realize, how many people in the major leagues are from Venezuela and Dominican Republic. And they had some really good guys on all these teams.
Yeah, and so, you think, the U.S. should have an advantage because of the sheer size of the country, but it doesn't matter when you're putting together a team of 25 players.
Yeah.
That's all you need. And there are great players out of the DR, and there are great players out of Venezuela. We went to the ninth inning last night. I got home, the game was 2-0, and so I saw Bryce Harper's home run to tie it. And then the you know, the big hit that Suarez got to drive in the run. Of course, leadoff walk, you know, leadoff walk and stolen base. That's not good pitching.
Yeah.
You know, that set the table for that run. But nevertheless, you know, they went into the bottom of the ninth, and I said, I'm torn. I'd like the USA to come back and get this. But on the other hand, I really like Palencia, and I want to see him do well, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you listen to these guys or watch him, Bryce Harper, everybody has, you know, the guy, nothing but kudos for the dude. I don't think I've watched a game. I've probably watched the guy 20 times. I don't think he's ever done anything when I watched him.
Well, last night.
Yeah, well, last night. But, I mean, this is so spotty. When I was a kid, we'd go from the south side to see the Cubs 2-3 times a year. We'd take the bus or take the L, back when you could do stuff like that at age 12 or 14 and didn't get shot. I probably saw every time we went up there, they were playing the Pirates. And every game, Roberto Clemente did something that, like, nobody else could do. It just so happened the ball got hit to him or something. You know, it was like Brooks Robinson said about his World Series performances. He goes, I got a lot of tough chances, and I made them. What if I'd have stood out there and they hit the ball to shortstop? Nobody would have known if I was good or bad. You know, it sort of has to be your day. And I'm sure Bryce Harper's a great ball player, but every time I saw Clemente, one went in the bullpen, he came up firing, and he threw a guy out at third base after it hit the chair in there, the bench in the bullpen. I'm going, who else can do that? I mean, every game the guy did something. But it just so happened. I mean, if he wouldn't have got a ball, I never would have known, right? I never get a chance to see Willie Mays.
I got a ball in the outfield, though.
Yeah, well, it's but I mean, he always got a hit or two. I mean, and plus, looked at the guy. He was like one long, thin muscle. There's nothing the guy couldn't do. He could run, do everything. But what a shame he died young, huh? I mean, just
You know, there also is a bias. You know, we remember what we've seen most recently. Sometimes, you know, and you know, there's a tendency, and there's a reason I wear a Clemente shirt sometimes. It's because he is my all-time favorite ball player. I just loved his game. But there's a tendency to remember the spectacular things he did because those stick in the memory.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if he had a week where he went into a slump, I don't think anybody remembers that.
Well, I mean, it's amazing how these games bundle together. The first year that we got the 305 seats, when the Cubs decided to have the upper deck open, you know, sometimes during, they never used to be open except on weekends, they decided to have these 305 games. They were the best party times ever. We're all young on the trading floor. They just let Murphy's just take over the whole corner and just put barricades up. You couldn't drive down Sheffield or Waveland. But anyway, for some reason, they bundled the Phillies. So I don't know how many Phillies games I saw in my first 2 years. I probably saw Carlton pitch 6 times. I mean, Maddox, I loved watching. I saw Gibson on TV. But this guy, Carlton, was a cut above. I mean, he was unreal. And you could just tell, Kevin, when all the right-handed batters come on, we were on the first base side. You'd get a foul or two up there every game, you know, around you. No one ever came right to us. But when that guy pitched, it was like you got like 15 of them. Nobody could catch up with the guy. Every right-handed batter is popping him up over that way. So they were all behind him or the ball was breaking out or something. He was just totally different. Plus, he was a big, huge guy who was mean as hell. I mean, I think that guy, I mean, I remember every game I saw that guy pitch. He was unlike anybody. And, you know, I mean, I think he's in the Hall, but he was like the best pitcher I ever saw. Now, whether he's better than Gibson, I don't know, because I never had the pleasure of seeing him. I never saw Koufax. But you're right. The people you see that just seem like they're men among boys, it's pretty scary, isn't it? Do we have Russell or Russo?
As long as I don't have sand in the batter's box against him, I'm not the least bit scared.
Oh, God, yeah. Do we have Russell or Larissa or both?
You have one of us.
You got Russell.
Russell, how are you, buddy?
Hi, I'll
doing
see
all right.
You.
All right, Kevin, take care. I'll talk to you on Friday.
Yeah.
So how are things? Are you in Indiana or are you here? Or are you on break?
I'm here. I'm on spring break.
Is Larissa on break as well?
Yeah. Yeah, I think she's still down in West Lafayette, though.
Right.
She's working on some stuff.
Well, if anybody has any...
We got things going on, and trust me, we're not doing nothing over spring break.
Well, you got two houses to keep up and all kinds of stuff. If you know anybody who has kids going to Florida or Texas for spring break, you got to delouse them when they come back. Supposedly, the bed bug outbreaks down there are huge. I heard that, and I'm going, is this world getting worse by the day or what? Nobody even thought about it.
She's in, actually, one of them's in Mexico.
Oh.
And your favorite Maggie, you know, she was in Japan and went to see the monkey last week.
All good on the travel, the TSA stuff didn't bother anybody?
I don't think either of them had any real issues.
Well, good.
I don't know, you know, I've seen videos of ridiculous lines in Austin, Texas, and places like that, but no, I don't think there's much of an issue.
Yeah, why do you suppose it's localized? I mean, New Orleans has a big problem, too.
I think maybe it has to do with the, maybe the attitudes of the staff. You know, maybe, it's kind of like if everybody at one Starbucks place has had enough and they eventually, they say, we're not showing up for work one day, so... One Starbucks, you can't have a line out the door because only three people showed up, but, you know, another one, everybody showed up for work that day. So I think it's spotty.
Well, if you want to do this, why can't you say you're paying the TSA guys and just not the ICE guys? Why do they have to be included?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean,
I guess because they're in the same department.
Well, they're all in the Homeland Security part,
and the
right?
whole thing is kind of silly in my mind.
Well,
I don't even know. It's become so commonplace that you know they want to be obstructionist and not do anything. You know, we're just kind of stalled out now. A little bit of stall out in Congress is good, so you don't do anything major that's stupid. But this is stupid on the other end.
Well, it's unfortunately a blunt instrument, but
yeah.
Anyway, what I asked Kevin the question.
I'm not even 100% sure. I mean, they're upset about ISIS behavior in Minnesota, and this is how they're expressing it.
Oh, they want. I've heard Senator Durbin essentially. He said they basically want these guys held to the same standards as any other police force in the country. In terms
okay.
of, I mean, and they refuse to do it. They don't want masks. They don't want warrantless searches. They don't want being able to throw people to the ground. They want everybody to wear body cameras like every other policeman. It's not unreasonable.
Not terribly unreasonable, but it is what it is. So, I didn't know what they were all upset about. I'm so sick of all of that I just don't even pay that much attention anymore. Well, also, it doesn't impact the financial market, so I don't care.
Well, now, speaking of financial markets, whatever anybody's political realm, when it comes to the money kind of counts up the same way on both sides, right? Now, we have a situation where we're talking $1 trillion every 100 days, and I wonder why we're doing our best to piss off the people that are borrowing or lending us the money, but that's another story. The question is...
Yeah, I don't... You know, people bring that up, and I think that'd be like shooting yourself in the foot.
Well,
If you try to pile out of our debt. I mean, China reduced their exposure to our debt pretty massively, and it didn't have an outsized impact on, you know, what's happening with our rates.
Well, I'll try and give you a reason why, because I was just looking at this the other day. Mm-hmm. China in the last year dropped off $100 billion in investment here.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost made up dollar for dollar by the U.K.
Gotta love that special relationship. Let's piss them off.
Yeah. So, what I'm saying is, leaving all that aside, you know, as I say almost all the time, there's only three ways if you're going to run a deficit that you can cover the deficit. One is you borrow it, two is you tax it, and three is you print it. If the answer is print it, which I think it might be,
it is.
It doesn't surprise me that the market keeps going up with a wary eye on long-term interest rates, because if inflation numbers pop up, which they they clearly did less CPI, although I think was weird about it, Russell, is it's one thing to come out with a flat-out lie on a labor number or a CPI number, and I'm not saying only Republicans do that, but the weird part about the CPI is they tell you they're doing it, which I find astounding. The last CPI, the real number was 0.5%. The adjusted number was 0.2. Now, last month, the real number was 0.4, and the adjusted number was 0.4. They're giving you, even the way they count it, they're giving you the difference. And I must have heard all day long on BBM and, you know, driving back and forth, how tame the number was. No, it wasn't. It was 0.5, for God's sake. And this is before the Iran thing happened. Mm-hmm. Gasoline was up 1.7%. It got adjusted down to 0.7 or 0.6. Who the hell does that? Obviously, it's up 1.7. Somebody went out and, you know, got the numbers at the pump. But I guess my question, how much more can we put in without seeing a 10-year rate up to, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10?
I think it's coming. I think it's coming sooner rather than later, too. I'm going to boldly just predict, and it's not really a bold prediction, we're not getting any more rate cuts in 26.
Well, it doesn't look like we're going to get one today.
Well, we're not getting one today, but the before the war started, the derivative market was pricing in two, one in July and one in December. Right now, they're pricing less than a 50-50 shot that we're going to get one in December, and that's it. And nobody's paying attention to that. And I'm amazed nobody's paying attention to that.
Well, I did a...
I guess there's too much else going on. But, you know, what rates are going to start. The only thing that I can talk about what I do trading-wise. The only thing that I did own was I had a portion of my portfolio in bonds, and I got rid of that. I'm like all cash.
Yeah, yeah. Why do you suppose...
good I have the ability that I can do that. If I couldn't, I would collar everything like you do.
Well, what do you make of the gold and silver getting pummeled along here? Would Bitcoin going the other way? It's kind of weird. I would think they would sort of be the same direction, but
no, I don't get that at all. There's not really a relationship there.
No, well,
you hear that, you see so many headlines, and I did the correlation, and there's no correlation there. There's no fundamental reason. Other than people that promote Bitcoin started saying it would be like digital gold, it'd be a great store of value, and it would be a good inflation hedge. It wasn't a good inflation hedge. It went down when we got our bout with inflation. It's one of those things that I think so many people have said it, that the fact that that the correlation really isn't there and hasn't been there is kind of surprising to people.
Yeah, I mean, it's
kind of like the government saying inflation isn't so bad, and my McDonald's costs two times what it cost 5 years ago. It's like when Don Lemon was interviewing somebody and they said, "Man, everything is more and more expensive." He goes, "Well, no, it's not. You see what the government says?"
Yeah,
it's kind of the same sort of thing. But now I think the driver on Bitcoin is how much risk are people willing to take on. You know, I almost look at it like a very risky NASDAQ stock at this point.
Well, I was...
with no earnings.
Speaking of the CPI, our good friend Larissa was kind of arguing with me a couple of weeks ago regarding the CPI and how she looks at the government numbers, and she's pretty confident that they do it the same way every month, so you really can use them, and she has a point there, by the way. And but I've always looked at them kind of from the other way, Russell, because I was on the other side of this, you know, when I was doing this stuff for Pullman. It needs to be accurate.
Yeah, if things are not being properly tied to, or if things that are being tied to it aren't, you know, going up the same. If CPI is 0.3% and my union contract for my job involves getting a cost of living raise based on that, and everything, all of my expenses have gone up 6 or 7%, and I get a 3% cost of living raise, that's not doing me a whole lot, is it?
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly.
And that's the big, the deficiency around CPI.
Well, if you were in the building business, which Pullman was, or if, the Russell Chief home building business 10 years ago got a contract with somebody to deliver them 10 homes a year for 12 years, with a certain price with a CPI on it, I'm thinking you and I were out of business 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Eventually, you have to make a non-CPI adjustment.
And so, well, I did. Actually, I did a little bit of, there is.
I'm sorry. I got to tell you something cool.
All right.
The fire department is here at my house, and they're getting ready to set the house on next door on fire.
There's got to be a why. There's got to be a story there.
No, oh no, it's a teardown, and they're going to let the firemen practice on it today. Pictures are coming.
What about your place? Hey, speaking of weird stuff, my nephew had a murder next door to him on Saturday.
Oh my goodness!
Some guy beat the crap out of his mother and killed her, and then he went outside with like a machete and started hacking at the tree on the parkway.
He really hated that tree.
And so that's when the police showed up, and they went inside and found the mother's body. And it turns out that 2 months ago, the old man died the same way, but they didn't categorize it as a murder. They thought he fell or something.
And he fell on a machete?
Well, no, he fell in the house, and it turned out the guy slugged him or hit him with something. And it turns out now he's got two murders. Anyway, I did a little research for our friend Larissa regarding the CPI, and I just found it, Russell. You can tell me it was there all along, probably, and I'm an idiot. You can actually go on into the site now, and if you say historical CPI fuel prices, every single line in the CPI, you can go get the history back to like 1980 or something. Yeah. Did that just happen, or did I just find it?
No. It's been there forever.
Oh, thanks. I just found it.
It's been there for, no, she and I are, we're like, we, her brother pointed out, it's pretty interesting, her brother pointed out that, you know what the cheapest vintage champagne is right now, or the cheapest year of champagne that you can buy if you like buy, you know.
Are you talking sparkling wine, or are you talking champagne from champagne?
Just in general.
Okay, so sparkling wine.
It was 2008, but the sales just dipped and then popped back up. And because of that, there's a whole lot, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't created. So apparently, if you're like buying vintage years, 2008 is really cheap because the sales were lower,
okay.
Which got us going down a rabbit hole on CPI and volumes and et cetera on luxury goods. And do those things ever crack before the market cracks, or is it coincident? When they come back, is it an all clear for the stock market? We've been digging around on that stuff the past couple of days.
Well, there's a new, let's say, cleaner, less adult version. There used to be a guy that every year would chart the prices of essentially hookers or call girls, you want to call them.
And, oh my goodness gracious!
Well, but he 1 year he was saying that the K-shaped recovery, the price of like streetwalkers was actually dropping, but the price of high-class call girls was going up.
Now, that's the K economy.
Yeah, some guy last week did something sort of similar, but that the price of high-end health clubs are going up, but the price of the ones you can get in for, like, every man are going down, which is, I won't say it's the same thing, but it's kind of the same sort of indicator.
I know this one's a stretch, but it's kind of I think it's a good example for the moment. So if you're, if you're doing health clubs in the CPI, which I doubt that's really in there, but were doing that and you're just going to, take the average might look like it's actually going up, even though it's going down for folks at the low end.
Right.
So maybe the K-shaped economy will turn into the K-shaped world, where
I think it sort of already is. But
Yeah, I used to have this. I lived in Atlanta, which Chicago's a little unusual that it doesn't have a ring around it like an expressway because of the lake. And
well, we do.
And, mostly like Indianapolis has a ring around it. Chicago, Memphis did, Atlanta did. I always had this vision of someday that ring turning into a giant wall, and the haves are on the outside, and the have-nots are on the inside.
By the way, we do. What do you think the Tri-State Tollway is?
Yeah, well, but it's not quite the same.
Right.
You know what? I mean, it doesn't totally incorporate. You can get out of Chicago without having to cross the Tri-State. You can go north.
Yeah, you could also sneak around the lake too.
Sheridan. But you know what I mean. No, you can go straight up Sheridan.
I know. You also can sneak around the lake. You can go right back. Yeah, the other way.
Yeah, you're a Southside guy. I'm sorry, I forgot. Yeah, you can do that part too. but I always had this vision that you know, if you really wanted to be nefarious and everything and do like the escape from New York, you just basically wall all the bad people inside and leave them in there.
Well, we could do that in a city by raising the bridges.
Yeah, well, that sort of works.
You know, it's sort of interesting. Two things about that, because we studied that actually at Pullman. You know what the actual word for that is, the ring around the city?
What?
Circumferential.
Really? I know.
But you know what?
We called it the perimeter in Atlanta. Well, you know, dated anybody outside the perimeter because it was a pain in the ass to get out there.
But you know what's even...
I'm serious.
I know.
I'm serious.
But you know what's even...
That was actually a thing. If you met a girl at the bar and she was like, oh, I live out in Marriott, you're like, well, screw that.
Well, it's like in New York. You're, I mean, you're down the expressway into Jersey. How many...
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
But you know what's what's more bizarre, and I don't know what you guys did in Memphis, but Indianapolis, when they did theirs, the city of Indianapolis annexed all the suburbs and unincorporated areas all the way out to the ring.
Yeah.
Now, can you imagine?
Memphis is like that. Memphis is like that as well.
Okay, because now Chicago didn't do that when they built the Tri-State.
You'll really appreciate this. So Memphis was basically, it's 240 that goes around Memphis. I say that the river's on one side of it, but you see a map of Memphis in 1960, and I went to the Catholic boys' school, and the city schools in Memphis would not play sports against any school that was not in the city limits. It was just a thing that they did.
Really?
They expanded the city limits of Memphis to include a little section right outside the loop perimeter thing, so that my school could continue to play against like Memphis Central High and stuff in sports.
Well, that's
if you see like the progression of the city limits.
A lot of
there's a little rectangle once, and it's just for my high school.
Well, we got to go to break here. We're not the only ones that did that. When I was, my mother got remarried after my dad died. Stepfather had a job in Toronto, so we actually moved to Toronto for 3-4 months till he found a job back here. And I went to his Catholic school in a suburb called Don Mills. I remember, mm-hmm. I remember it being Don Mills. And so, for the SIBO years ago, they sent me up to Toronto to do some lecturing, and I went with a couple of the girls from the marketing thing, and we went to this big... Anyway, I'm up in Toronto. And I'm like, I'm looking on the map, where the hell is this Don Mills? I can't find it. Well, it turns out it's now a neighborhood damn near in the middle of Toronto. they annexed all the suburbs out. So when you say Toronto is 3 million people and it's as big as Chicago, well, yeah, they stole all the suburbs. We're here, you know, the suburbs have their own population, right? So even though the city is bigger, is now as big as Chicago, it's because they essentially stole Oak Park and Evergreen Park and Oak Lawn.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
See, to me, it's unusual that you have so many suburbs because of where I grew up.
Illinois has more, way more, villages, towns, and cities than any other state in the Union.
I know. That means you have all these government officials getting paid.
Well, how many fire departments? How many police departments? We used to work in my first job was at Allied Van Lines. It was in Broadview. You ever heard of Broadview?
Yeah.
Well, if you walked seemingly 8 blocks in any direction, you were in another town.
Yeah.
There were all kinds of them over there. And every one of them had their own mayor, their own everything else. It's crazy.
It's like HOAs turned into towns.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. S&P futures up 2, NASDAQ futures up 17. We were up, then we went down, now we came back to up. We'll be right back. Quick break. I'll let you know what I found out when I was debating Larissa about the CPI. I'll just be real brief with it, but right now we're going to break.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-639-8620. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not, it'll be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car. And as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-639-8620. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-639-8620. That's 1-800-639-8620.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howie, Andrew on the board. Headline today is Israel says it has killed Iran's intelligence minister, which is the third assassination in 3 days. I guess we got to do one a day of those, and I don't know what the goal there is, but S&P futures down 8 and NASDAQ futures down 24. Actually, the Junes are down 36. Man, make it 30. The Marches, which are going off the clock on Friday, maybe Russell can explain that, because they trade tomorrow, but then they just settle Friday morning. Anyway, they're down 42, so we were up, now we're down. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 25.1%, the FTSE down 1, call that flat. CAC around up 44.5, so very quiet over in Europe, slightly to the upside. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei up 1,500, that's almost 3%. South Korea's KOSPI, which had the huge down move last week, leads gains in Asia as investors assess Japan trade data, await Fed verdict. Okay. Hang Seng up 157, that's 0.6% Shanghai, which actually has been moving the last couple days. Yesterday it was up almost 1%. Today it's up 13, that's 0.3%. So Shanghai has had a move to the upside. Bonds unchanged at 4.21, that's a 10-year. Oil is up only 15 cents today, but it's 96.36. Brent, however, is up 2.38. So Brent is really spreading out compared to West Texas Intermediate. It's 105.80. So that's more of a world price, I think, than ours. We'll have Russell comment on that. RBOB gas up to 3.16. Add 90 some cents taxes. One of these days you're going to be paying, you know, $4.10 plus transportation. So call it $4.30. I don't see any way around that if it stays here. Gold keeps getting clobbered. It's down another $104, under 5,000, 49.03. Silver down $1.70, 78.23. Boy, I'm glad I got puts on there for this, my people and that stuff. Foreign exchange, this is one of the reasons. The dollar is 115 against the euro. It was 117. The euro was 117 and over that a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. British pound 133, and it was over 135. So it's been at least a 1.5% move in the currencies in the last couple of weeks. Crypto down 2,200 today, so it's down to 72,369. It has been real strong. Andrew, what do you got for us? Quick traffic, weather, sports. It snowed this morning. Kind of sucked.
All right, yeah, it's not off to a great start. It's Wednesday, March 18th. It's currently 7:33. Yeah, starting off with just a little bit of sports here. The Suns lost to the Timberwolves, 116-104. Chicago weather not looking much better. It's currently 25 degrees. We're at a high of 43 today. Some small flurries throughout the morning. That's going to move to cloudy skies and slightly warmer temperatures. And, you know, we're here surprised by this snow. I then look at the weather for Phoenix. They are currently going through an excessive heat warning. They're currently at 69 degrees right now. They're going to have a high of 103 today.
They changed some of their day games in spring training to last night.
Yeah, yeah. So it's looking bad out there. It says, again, warning of heat stroke, record-breaking temperatures. So that's not too good. And then on top of all that, the usual site here that I use to report our traffic seems to be down. So I don't have the exact numbers. I just kind of got the broad broad radar view here. So if you're on the inbound, basically all the major expressways are experiencing heavy delays today due to that unexpected snowfall. If you're on the outbound, things will be a little heavy on the Eisenhower around Central Avenue and on the I-94 around Kimball Avenue. So that's all I got. Back to you, Jim.
Producer price index, which came in hot last month and was supposed to come back this month, the 0.3 actually came in 0.7. That's one of the reasons we're down 17 now. We were up 20 when we came in. That's not a good number. Ooh. Russell. Yeah, that's ouch on that one, huh?
Yeah, that's before. Yeah, everybody's got to keep in mind the CPI and the PPI we got. That's pre-war.
Yeah.
I can't even fathom how much on edge we're going to be for those numbers next month.
Well, Russell,
they got to get to manipulating now.
Yeah, what? We had a long discussion with Larissa a couple weeks ago, and boy, I love talking to her and you. We were talking about the CPI, and I went back and I did just a little bit of research because they, rather than say the whole thing is a bomb, which I probably could, the two that I always zero in on are medical expenses and owner's equivalent rent, because those are fairly easy to track. But I went back and looked at their stuff. And my big bitch with these medical stuff is they claim it's 6.5% of your basket when it's 20 to 21% of the economy. So that one is like a flashing red light on the page, right? I mean, it's not even close. Now, owner's equivalent rent's a little more complicated, and you probably could go into that better than I could. But so I went back at this thing I found that Russell said has been there forever, which I'm sure it has. I just found it. I went back and looked at the CPI piece of the medical stuff. And if you go back, I went from February 2026 back to December of 2000, okay? So, you know, I picked 2000. I just happened to pick it. And the CPI, the total number, a dollar in 2000, they've got is $1.88 now. So they're saying there's been stuff has almost doubled in the 26 years in general. It's up 88%. Their view of the medical piece, a dollar then is now $2.40 now. So they're saying that the medical stuff is up a hell of a lot more than the regular stuff. Now, I think, Russell, you and I probably could each do 10 minutes of research, and we might argue that this $2.40 is really like three or more, because if you look at medical insurance that companies pay from 2000 to 26, it's up. It's over three times, easy, and that's probably with people getting more and more deductibles, but I'm not going to go into that. But I'm just going to use their numbers. But if you take the 240 instead of the 188 and adjust from 0.65 up to 20%, you essentially add 0.7% a year to the number, even if you corrected just that piece. And if you go back then and add 0.7% a year to the total, I'm sorry, 0.2% a year, you really, this 188 becomes 2-something, which really means if you go back every year, not every year, but over the period of time, we're talking about wages, not wealth going up with stocks and stuff. Wages have been up like, you know, 2% or something. Mm-hmm. At most, more like 1 or 1.5. So if you add 0.5%, even 0.2 cents to the CPI over those years, I've got wage earners, not increasing housing prices, stock prices. I've got wage earners damn near in a recession for 26 years, where they have not progressed vis-a-vis wages versus, and that's just one of these pieces. If we had the housing part in it, I think we could clearly make the case that every man has been in a recession for 26 years.
Just about every.
But I mean,
certain people that are dumb, you know, that.
Well, I mean, we're talking about some people have had a lot of promotions.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you are teaching high school and all of a sudden 20 years later you're teaching at graduate school at Indiana, well, duh. But I'm saying if you'd have stayed at high school, I don't think you'd have kept up with inflation.
No. The inflation raises that a lot of people get if you stay at the same job. they end up making you work backwards.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. And
companies should be looking at that.
I think.
Are they better? You know, are they better off? Staying ahead. You know, staying a little bit farther, or making the real wage, you know, above CPI. Having a wide enough spread there that people are comfortable enough staying where they're working and they live a decent life. I think it's impossible for companies to do that, and they don't have to do that because, you know, you've got a new generation of workers that are coming in periodically that will work for a bit less than somebody that's been with you for 20 years.
That's
when, you know, when I've been at a large public company that's doing their layoffs. You know, what my understanding is, the first thing they do is they take a, you know, how much people get paid, and they take a dollar line, and everybody that's making less than $100,000, they're safe. They're only going after the people that have accumulated, you know, through raises, et cetera, a really nice salary for what some other people are doing for half the price.
Well, I think a lot of it, Russell, and I took a whole semester in undergrad, and does anybody teach? Is there like a course anymore in labor economics?
Maybe in the social sciences.
Well, that's where I was. You know.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, not that I know.
Well, I don't think there was ever one in business economics, but
yeah,
we took urban economics, and we took, and you learned a lot in there. And it's mm-hmm. The theory that obviously you know, the theory is you're gonna pay people. If you've got a full plant with all these machines, and you hire like 10 guys, well, those guys are going to make you way more per hour than they're making, right? So the mm-hmm. object is you keep hiring people until the last person you hire costs you the same amount as he benefits you, right? It's almost like a supply and demand curve. Mm-hmm. In fact, it is a supply and demand curve. Only it's for labor, and I see that totally kind of off the wall now. I don't know the companies even can quantify so much what somebody's worth to them. So if they're making mm-hmm. 150, well, let's just fire them and see what happens. You know, what nobody, certainly in the news, seems to indicate is if there's 60 people working at a place, and I'm going to assume that they're not all on their cell phone all day long, if everybody's doing something, and all of a sudden you lay off 10 people, I mean, what have you really done? You've cut the pay of everybody else because now they have to make up, assuming those people did something, which I can't imagine 10 people go to work and don't do anything. I mean, maybe, I guess it happens, mm-hmm. but you got those people now have to make up for what those people do. Now, in white-collar situations, it's harder to quantify that. Now, clearly at Pullman, if you've got 10 welders working there and they're working their full shift and doing a pretty good job, and there's nobody's out having to smoke 8 hours or anything like that, and you get rid of two guys with the same amount of welding done, well, hell, you better start working an extra couple hours or Saturdays or something. I mean, somehow you got to make up for it. Now, in a white collar situation, I mean, what you do, it's relatively easy because you're teaching four classes. Well, if you fire half the or a third of the people, and you've got to teach now five or six, you're very aware that, hey, my pay just got cut, right? Because now I got to do a hell of a lot more for the same amount of dough. But nobody thinks of it that way, really. I mean, and in white collar situations, it's sort of hard to quantify that. Same thing, Russell. If you and I decided, screw what we're doing for a living, even though we both love what we're doing, and we go to Walmart and we say, hey, you know, we know a lot about tires, and we go in a tire place, and all of a sudden, 2 months after we're in there, instead of selling 50 tires a day, they're selling 70 or 75. I don't think Walmart has any way, nor do they want to, reward us. But now we're worth how much more to the place than the last two schmucks were.
Yeah.
I don't think they even realize it, care about it, or anything.
Well, they don't have to.
They don't have to, which is kind of weird. If you actually took a course in labor economics, you would think that firms that you would have to, and if there was any kind of competition, if there were five tire places around, somebody's going to say, hey, let's grab these two idiots from Walmart. they're stealing all our business. They know what they're doing. But, you know, in some towns, there might not be another tire place. So it really gets all screwed up.
Or if there were, not anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, Walmart does that to folks as well.
So, I mean, you really, what I remember from that course, none of that seems, I won't say none of it, a lot of it seems to not be working in today's world. You could be worth an awful lot of dough to someplace. Plus, a lot of times, Russell, I mean, it's happened to our buddy John Lee. If your firm is taken over by another firm in another country, it's real easy to lay people off you never met. God, this guy's making $200,000 a year. What's he doing?
Oh yeah.
You know, well, let's get rid of him and let's get rid of him and see what happens. Basically, right?
Yeah, that's fun. I like how you. I never thought of that one before. But yeah.
Let's see.
You know, I'm cutting a bunch of people over in London. If I take over a London firm, that's pretty easy. I don't know these people.
And by the way, we'll see if all of a sudden the same stuff keeps coming out of there. We'll see what happens. If it's too bad, we'll go hire a couple of people back. Right? I mean, it's kind of what you do. Well, the government had to do that in some of these areas that Doge went in, right? Didn't they have to hire some of the people back?
Yeah, they had to backtrack on a little bit of that.
So what do you think now? We've got this number today. I got to believe the next CPI is a total clunk. We're down 25.
Yeah.
We got gold down now, GDX down $3, gold's down over $100. The 10-year rate I've got is up 12 basis points at 4.21. It was under 4 when the war started. So we're only up 2 basis points, or 20, but...
You think when it gets closer to 5, people will start to pay attention?
Well, what do you make of... Well, what do you think the spread between the 30 and the 10 has widened out? The 10 is almost 5. It's 4, or 30 is 4.85.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a conversation last night with a couple older attorney guys, and meeting a bunch tonight, judges, and I said, you know... The one guy, and he's a nice guy, and I said, you know, I talk on the air and I talk to people and I say these rates could, you know, they could just run up, and everybody under the age of 50 or 45 go, that can't happen. You know, they might go up if the Fed gets, you know, crazy. And
no, things can happen. I'll show you.
Yeah. You know, and I try
so hard to get that across with undergrads, and when I was still at Loyola, man, did I had some students fight me on, oh, we'll never see inflation.
Well,
I did a victory lap by myself.
Well, you know, think of it was, though, Russell, is if you were, if you lived through the last one, the bruises, let's say the marks they left was so bad that you would never dream that we would go down that road again. That was kind of, and then we didn't for like a real long time.
No, so, we didn't for a long time.
So, and then all of a sudden now we're going down the same road again. I said to this guy, I go, you know, everybody's convinced that maybe the Fed, if they really got a hair up their behind, and inflation got higher, they would get like 4 quarter-point increases in a year. And I'm going, Robin and I went and got a bridge loan in November at 8.25% or something like that, and by June it was like 14. So the idea that it can't happen, I still have a scar to prove it. I mean, it can, right?
Yeah. And typically if we get one bout with inflation, they come in twos. They really do come in twos. I don't know what they thought was going to happen with Iran. Did they think they were just going to roll over after a week?
I don't. The whole idea of how this has been.
I mean, I do think we have devastated them. I think the only place that you can you've got to watch news outside of the United States to really kind of get an unbiased look at what's going on war wise. I watch the Australian news all the time. They're pretty straightforward with the whole thing.
Well, Trump said yesterday he was watching the BBC news and how he's all pissed off at them.
Well, yeah, BBC's another one. BBC and the Australian ones. The Australia, I think everybody's kind of conservative there, so it's kind of funny to see their view of us. But BBC's always been the good neutral one that we have on in the background. We changed our cable service, and we don't have BBC News in our current house. Houses, which I didn't make that decision.
Okay.
So I'm missing my BBC, so I've had to watch the Australian news on my phone.
Well, the thing I'm kind of curious about, and I do think we're being led by the nose by this Netanyahu, and the guy's going to keep shooting people because if he's out of power, he goes to jail or something. I don't know what the story is with that guy, but I don't know enough about it.
Apparently, he would be worried. He's worried about people coming after him once he's done, once he's out of office, the other side. Kind of like the things that are going on here, where whoever's in charge now gets to try to charge the other side with things.
Well, I've been reading and listening to some stuff regarding. Mm-hmm. In terms of decisions they make, I don't know. You go backdrop on that, but some of the actions of this son-in-law and the deals he's making while supposedly negotiating for the country and doing stuff for himself, I don't ever recall an ambassador or somebody in that position being able to do both on a visit before. Maybe it's okay. It just seems odd to me. But the thing about this war is, I was no fan of the Ayatollah, right? Mm-hmm. Or any of that stuff, and I don't like a country that, government, the 85% of the people want them out, and they're there. And by the way, if you don't like them, they come and shoot you.
Mm-hmm.
And we seem to be putting together some kind of a force here. You can't tell me the 92,000 people that Noam wanted to hire for. These ICE people were there for people that are immigrants. They're here for something. They want to do that for some other reason. I don't know what it is. But I really thought, Russell, that Iran, they're no good nicks, right? They're, but they had the guys in the Houthis. They got the guys in Lebanon. They got the guys in Hamas. It seemed to me that in the last 3 or 4 years, when Biden was there, and some... that pretty much Israel and us have knocked all those guys out. I mean, Hezbollah is a shadow of its former self. So is Hamas. The Houthis don't seem to be causing any trouble. We pretty much have kicked their ass everywhere. They got a new guy in Syria that doesn't seem to want the Iranians in there. I thought that we had those guys about as low ebb, not to mention we dropped a huge bump.
I think that's why we're going after him right now.
But I mean...
I think that's... And I'm not saying I agree, but I think that's part of the logic right there is, the response to what happened in October a few years ago in Israel, where they just, rained rained terror down on... trying to get hold of Hezbollah the best that they could, because that's who was behind that. They decimated them so much. The situation to the north of them is different than it's been for a couple of decades. It really, if you were going to try to go after Iran right now, was probably as good a time as you've had in the past 10 or 15 years.
Where does somebody... And this must be my...
And I'm saying, I think this is what the logic was behind it. And then there was always this belief that if we ever really did something to Iran, that, there were going to be guys running down, running down Michigan Avenue, blowing themselves up in front of the Nike store. Well, that there were all these sleeper cells all over the United States that were going to get activated. And I mean, we've seen, I think, 4 or 5 incidents, but nothing, absolutely spectacular.
Well,
So I think I really do believe that we thought if we ever went after Iran that their ability to fight back was much greater than it has been.
Well, there's all that, and I try and understand that. But the basic tenet is Trump doesn't like them, and neither do I. Do you get to bomb them just because
nobody
you have
here should like them?
Okay, but now.
And that's a that's an issue, because I think there's some people here that like them.
No, I
and I'm talking about Caucasian people that like them, not
I think there's I think there's an awful lot of people that think that in their entire lifetime there's people in the world that other people don't like. But the you realize that this is the seventh country we've bombed since this guy's been in office this time.
Seventh thing. Who else have we gone after?
Iraq, Iran, Syria. We've bombed people. Yemen, Venezuela. There's seven.
Israel?
We have. So
we bombed?
We have bombed. We've killed people in all these places.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the Iranians. I don't like Putin. Mm-hmm. But I don't think just because they're weaker than us and you got an itchy trigger finger, you get to go bomb them. Because one of these days, and maybe we're getting there, we might be the bad actor. I mean, I don't think you get to do that. I mean, I don't like what China's doing. I don't think we get to go and blow them up tomorrow just because we don't like them.
Not that we just don't like. You know, there are people that we don't like, but, you know, the whenever they open their version of Congress in Iran, the first thing they say is death to America and death to Israel. They're not saying let's make Iran great again. They're fixated.
All I'm saying is there's a spread between not liking somebody and then not liking you, where you feel that you get to go in and kill a bunch of people. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were even people that are even the guy who just resigned, the Republican guy, said there was nothing imminent 2 weeks ago that said we had to go bomb these people.
Well, they had some protests, and depending on who you listen to, the Australian network says that 7,000 people were killed during the protests. I've heard 30,000 to 40,000 from other people, which is
it's horrible. It's horrible.
I don't care if it's 7 or 30 to 40, but these people are and they were protesting. It's not like they were running down Michigan Avenue and looting every store. They were actually doing the big chant, walking in a big wave.
Yeah.
And they massacred them, absolutely massacred them. And it just right there, somebody needs to do something about that if they can.
We didn't do anything in Tiananmen Square.
No, and that was a completely different leadership.
Same people.
I don't know
party.
If he would have or not.
But I'm saying
I mean, did we not say?
I'm gonna put this. As,
I mean, we weren't really dealing with Japan back then. I'm sorry, China. Goodness gracious,
when this happens, though, Russell, this is my concern. Right. When this happens, and you're not gonna get me to argue that I like the people, the leadership in Iran, because I sure as hell don't. But I know a lot of people from Iran that can't stand these guys, and you're right, they're horrible. But now, when you make a decision like this, that's why. Mm-hmm. You have a constitution that says you got to go to Congress. You got to plead your case, and this is why. And maybe Congress would have said, "Yeah, you're right. It is time to go do something with these idiots." But I know a lot of people that are on the right side of this, right side of the aisle. I don't want the single moral person who's making these life or death calls to be Donald Trump. He is not my idea of a moral person at all. Never has been. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he went to the Senate and people on both sides of the aisle said, "You're right, Russell's right. We got him at the weakest point. Let's knock some crap out. That way, nobody has to worry about him again." If that's what happened, I'll roll with it. This idea, I hear the guy talk every day. Well, I'm going to Cuba next. I don't like those people either. I mean, when does Donald Trump become the people that can go out and kill people whenever he feels like it?
Kind of when he got elected president.
No, that's not what the Constitution says.
I know that's not what the Constitution says, but the way that the powers all pull, tug and push on each other, the executive branch sometimes is more powerful and then it kind of ebbs and flows, etc. I mean, the executive branch has been really strong, even under Biden to a certain point.
I agree.
He did an awful lot executive order-wise. So, I think if you start to trace backwards, maybe under W, the A lot of people, you know, a lot of people on the right like to cite, well, you know, Obama, he said, I've got a pen and I've got a phone. And then, you know, Obama killed a lot of people with drones, but I think there are people that should have been killed. So I don't have a problem with that one either. I really don't have a problem with either side taking out bad actors.
The issue comes down to,
don't.
Let me ask you this. I mean, this is on a personal level. I know where you can answer this.
Mm-hmm.
If we were going out and had a reason to kill some people, there's a reason why, in my opinion, the Constitution reads the way it reads. And oh, by the way, this act that they use, the presidential thing, it's supposed mm-hmm. to be when we are under attack, the president can do something and goes to Congress in 6 months. Doesn't mean you can start a war on your own. But if you or I, if the two of us were in the Oval Office together as co-presidents, I have a feeling, as much as we may want to have done something like this, mm-hmm. when we start dropping bombs on people that aren't coming back, you know, especially the girls' place that we landed a bomb on and killed 160 little girls, I think you and I would want to make sure that our decision was run by other people that agreed with us so that we were solid on our footing. The idea that we would do that on our own and just assume we're right, like we're some deity, I don't think either one of us would want that. This guy does. He thinks he's a deity,
well,
for God's sake.
I you know, the people that, again, the people that we've gone after, I don't have a problem with that. I unfortunately, you know, we've got these rules of engagement that make it really difficult sometimes for our, we're not incorporating them right now, but in the past we've had these rules of engagement where, you know, we ask our military to do something, but we kind of handcuff them a little bit. You can't shoot at somebody even if they're pointing a gun at you until they pull the trigger, you know, silly things like that. And I don't know if you remember, I haven't heard anybody mention this, but Trump, maybe about a year ago, he called in every commander from around the world to have a meeting in D.C.
Yeah, he made him sign a pledge to him, damn near.
Well, I don't know if that's what, but I feel like part of what, not necessarily a pledge to him, but I feel like part of it might have been, look, you know, these rules of engagement that's handcuffed you guys, we're gonna you know, free that up a bit. And, you know, I'm going to ask you guys to do some things. But I'm going to allow you to do them. I'm going to let you do your job and kind of stay out of the way with what you do.
But there goes,
as opposed to, other presidents that have said, you know, we need to take care of this issue here, but, you know, and I want to put a bunch of troops there, but they can only defend themselves. So now we've just put some sitting ducks out in the middle of desert. I feel like there are bad actors in the world that want to do us harm. I feel like the government's job, I think the main job of our government is to protect us.
I don't disagree with that.
Period. The citizens.
But
not everybody that's inside our borders right now.
Right, but we have
citizens of our country.
We have killed. Oh, whoa. Careful where you go with that. I mean, if
they're I'm not saying that everybody that's here illegally should be, you know, that,
no, I'm talking about if we
taken out, but they should be kicked out of the country. They're coming into the country illegally. It that's a crime. Well, they haven't done anything. Yeah, they have. They came into the country illegally.
Okay, that's one.
No, if I know sometimes you'll get let go on this one, and I know this is a silly example, but what if I get pulled over 3 days after my birthday and I forgot to renew my license? The person that pulled me over can give me a ticket for having an expired license because I didn't take care of something that I should have taken care of. If you want to come to the United States, there's a correct way to go about trying to do it.
It gets harder and harder every year.
And one of the reasons it gets harder is we're applying resources to the people that are trying to take the easy way. The people that took the hard way are the most hard line against illegal immigrants.
I will say at the end of the day, meaning 4 years from now, whenever the hell it is, you're going to find out that this guy Kirshner has stolen more money than every illegal person who's in the country combined. We don't go after antitrust. We don't go after anything like that. We don't go after anything. And yet we've let somebody say these guys are the whole problem, guys that are here illegally. And yet you can go see a Mexican family somewhere and there might be two or three people there that aren't citizens. They've been here for 20 years. They haven't done anything. They're paying Social Security. They got a job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how all of a sudden are they your criminal? And we got to boot them out of here. And oh, by the way, we're not even going to boot them back to Mexico. We're going to send them some other place they don't even come from. I mean, how is that?
Well, you send them. Supposedly, you're supposed to send them to where they.
We're not. We're sending them anywhere we feel like it.
Well,
I mean, you're saying
people are breaking the law.
Well, I mean, a lot of people are breaking the law.
That's, I know.
I mean, it's
and you know, if I'm breaking the law, if I'm and I get caught, there are going to be repercussions
for
that.
Except, all right, I guess what I'm saying, Russell, is we're allowing ourselves to have somebody. It reminds me an awful lot of, you know, some of the stuff I've read about, you know, Germany in the 30s. You know,
mm-hmm.
people didn't realize that the Jewish dentist that was taking care of their kids was really their enemy until they were told he was. I don't necessarily think that the guys, you know, looking at the Home Depot for a job are my enemy. I mean, we gotta dump
they're
them.
They're not my enemy, but they've broken some laws.
I would say that that there's people here that have been here. Actually, no, lady, I shouldn't say this because people come after me. She's been here 30 years. She cleans houses, has a Social Security card, mm-hmm. is paid in the whole way. And she's going to have to, when she gets to be 65, she's got to go back to Poland, probably.
Because that's what the person that helped us out ended up doing, and that's what she knew she was going to do.
Well, but I'm saying, where is the danger? Well,
that was actually her plan.
The plan is they pay into Social Security, and they're never going to get a benefit.
Hmm.
Okay, so who's screwing who there?
Well, did they get to, you know, they could, I think she'll get Social Security.
No, they won't. They won't. How do you get Social Security?
Even if she paid into it?
No.
Okay, because I know she paid into it. She was, like, really meticulous about all those things.
Matter of fact, what I heard is in 1995, you could just walk into a Social Security and say, I'm working, I need a Social Security card, and they'd give you a card. 97, then you needed birth certificates and all that other kind of stuff. And, you know, so, I mean, one of our listener to the show, client, friend, his parents owned a restaurant. Now, the guy's, you know, he's not a kid anymore. We're talking a long time ago. Matter of fact, the young Barack Obama used to come into their restaurant. And over on the east side, he goes, guys would come in with a Social Security card. And he goes, we sort of knew it was fake, my parents. They would send the check in. We never once got a call saying, hey, what's this number? We don't, who is this guy? We don't, there's no such number. They just took every check. I mean, and yet people say they're screwing the system. No, they're not. They're never going to be on Medicare. They're never going to get a check, and they paid in for 30 years, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
I know a guy who was an accountant, and he does accounting for this construction firm. He goes, this dude just retired. He's been there 25 years. Get a paycheck every week, send him money to the federal government. The guy's not a citizen. He's got to find a place to go. 25 years he's been paying it. No Medicare, no Social Security he's going to get. I mean, and yet somehow they're screwing us. I think it's kind of the other way around. Just saying. I mean, you can't write fiction like this, Russell.
Yeah.
I mean, how does... Way back in the day, in the 80s, I read some article that some people were sending the number... How many people had all zeros as their Social Security number? And... They took the checks.
You know, I remember when, you know, I was in college. We're way over right now. But
well, we started late, so we'll go another minute.
But I remember in college, Clinton changed a bunch of the rules, and all of a sudden, you know, where I was waiting tables, I had to show up with I had to give them a copy of my Social Security card and a couple of other things. And they would come in and check it every once in a while, make sure that there weren't any illegals working at the restaurant that I was working at. Well,
yeah, before that it was wide open, and a lot of times people would yell at the front door, and three guys would run out the back. It was like this down here, downtown, when I started down here. All these places.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. I in the 90s, when I was doing similar kind of jobs in Chicago, I remember a few situations.
You know where else it was absolutely rampant in an old dash? The hoity-toity country clubs.
Oh, yeah. No, they're... I worked at a Burnham Park Yacht Club. And everybody there was... let's say they were a seasonal employee.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you went out to... You know, I've never was a member of a club, but when we used to do the Notre Dame functions, we'd always get a... There was always a place on the court where there was, like, a shack where all the tractors and stuff were kept. And, and above the place... There was always a room for 10 people or 8 people to stay.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if you would have been a member of that club and you would have walked into the meeting and said, hey, my name's Russell and I'm a member here, but I don't like the idea that we've got a bunch of illegals here. I think we should raise our dues and get like regular guys. How long do you think you'd have lasted in the room without beer cans bouncing off your head?
Kick you out the door. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, but so We've had a 55 point swing in this S&P's. We've had a 250 point swing in the Nasdaq since we've been doing the show. And I got to believe a lot of it has to do with this PPI. How are we going to wiggle our way out of this, or are we?
It's going to be painful. That's all I have to say.
Are you?
Not very encouraging, but it's going to be painful.
Should we short Treasuries? And boy, I don't want to do that.
I don't know about shorting them, but like I said, I had a portion of everything in bonds, and on Monday I was like, you know, this I don't think this is going to go well.
Well, 10-year is now up to 4.23, so it's up 24 ticks. That's 0.6%. So we're starting to see some move there. So there might be some people thinking the same way we're thinking. I hope we don't go down that road again, Russell. I sure hope we don't.
I'm afraid it doesn't look good.
Well, anyway, always good to talk to you. Say hello to my two favorite daughters of people on the show.
Okay.
One of these days, if the one doesn't mind coming on for 10 minutes, I want her to explain that thing in Kankakee. What was going on? Why everybody?
She's so shy.
You know what?
She's shy in it. So
I've had.
I'll talk to her about it.
I'll bet the minute she starts talking, she'll be all talk.
Oh, she would, because she knows all this stuff so much inside and out.
I'm fascinated by it. So, you know, I love it. Anyway, buddy, you take care of yourself. Andrew, nice job. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.